This time of year, the school calendar really starts to fill up. Spring activities, testing season, and that final push toward the end of the year. It's a great moment for kids to stay focused and build confidence in what they're learning. That's where IXL comes in. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand their schoolwork, from math and reading to writing and science. It's designed for pre-K through 12th grade, with personalized interactive content that adapts to each child's level and pace. IXL makes it easy to stay on track with instant feedback and clear explanations, skills organized by grade level, and simple progress tracking. It fits into even the busiest spring schedules. It's also trusted nationwide. In fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
You're listening to Feeding the Mouth That Bites You with Ashley Parrish and Jessica Pfeiffer,
a weekly podcast guide on parenting teens and launching them into the world. As always, we are joined by psychologist and author, Dr. Ken Wilgus.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back. Today's episode, we're answering your frequently asked questions.
Again, we've done this. I like these.
I love it because we kind of pop around to different topics and keeps it interesting.
Plus, yeah, with questions, we get really good feedback from people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I love hearing from you guys. Sometimes it's harder to find you guys on Instagram. For some reason, there's like a secret folder that I have to like go and search for. So if you've reached out to us there, we're seeing it, maybe not right away, but I'm going to be extra intentional about looking for those because we love hearing from you guys.
And for us older people that don't know anything about Instagram, read the reviews from the, you know, from on the podcast app and the just the clicking the 5 stars is just super encouraging. So if you feel okay with that and you haven't done it yet, please give us a good rating and feedback because it's very encouraging. It helps us to know how we're doing and where we're getting to what people need. So.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. This is the most rewarding part of doing this podcast is hearing that it's changing people's family life, you know, and that it's making a difference in their relationships. And I would say that all of us love that. That's the purpose. We're doing this to glorify God and to bring families back together. So this is a really neat thing to see and witness.
That's exactly right.
So. All right, guys, let's get started. So we have a question from a listener that wants to know, Dr. Ken, what if you heard of this planned emancipation stuff late? You've got a junior or a senior, their freedoms are kind of out of control and there's no relationship there between the teen and the parents. Is it too late?
Yeah, that comes up a lot. And usually, I don't know what you meant by freedoms are out of control. Usually they are, haven't been given freedoms. They've been given, you know, there's a lot of conflict. And the parents think they have given in by giving more privilege. You know, we let him do blank and he's still just as upset. And that, you know, people come up with that rather a lot. They wish they had read the book or listened to the podcast years before. But I think the good news is that, no, it is never too late to initiate that. The trick is to be super clear that what we have learned and what we want to do now for this last 18 months or, you know, year or 2 years is a different approach. And you really want to be clear because parents oftentimes do the steps of planned emancipation, but they don't do enough frequent reminding the teenager, you do remember why we're doing this, right? Not because you're a good kid, not even because I like your choices, but you must choose these things for yourself because you are getting older. You're an adult. So as long as you're super clear about that, I have many parents that will come home and go, wow, okay, we just talked to this shrink dude. And this is a speech I give him all the time. And he tells us that our attempts to be helpful and to really be caring about you are interpreted as being disrespectful and patronizing. And, you know, hopefully you can open the conversation with, does that happen? Are there sometimes when we're reminding you and advising you, does that feel like we're treating you like a kid? And usually with a kid that's a junior and senior, you'll get a big agreement that, yeah, absolutely. Then you make a big statement that we did not want that. That's not what we've intended. And we really want to change that and make sure that you know that you are more and more in charge of your own life. And so here's, and you, you know, with that, you'd present a freedoms list, not an expectations and consequences list, the rules thing. You start with the freedoms list and only emphasize the freedoms, because that's usually what teenagers cannot even believe. So, you know, they just listen like, I can't, are you, what are you saying? I don't have to answer to you about this. Yes, that's what we're saying.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So it's not too late.
Never too late. That's correct.
Perfect.
Okay. Another question we had was about a 15-year-old who is very responsible. He gets up early for sports. He does his homework and he keeps up with his grades, but he's not taking responsibility for his piano practice, which he's been doing for a long time. And his parents have supported his piano lessons for many years. They have to remind him. They've tried docking his allowance to encourage him to follow through on his practice. But it's hard for the mom to let that go and try to decide how to handle the situation in their home.
Yeah. And what usually comes up with that is that this kid is quite good at piano. You know, he or she has done this for years and we really value that. And I think our teenager values that, but he or she is just not doing it. And we've done this or that thing to try to encourage it. So that should be obvious, but maybe it's not because of the value of these lessons. Very often what you have is a teenager who, in fact, in, even within themselves, they're not sure. Like, I wish that I valued this more, but I just don't. So the trick there is to not go down the road that's going to look ridiculous, which is you're grounded because you didn't practice piano. That's just dumb. And you'll know it. And your teenager will know it. Then what's the other alternative? Is to really talk to that teenager about, you know, you're not practicing and maybe it's hard for you. You've got a lot of other stuff going on. And so we just want to let you know that if you were a kid, we'd probably be punishing you or whatever, but you're a young adult. So you need to make your own decisions about this. We're not going to pay for lessons if you're not preparing for them. We just don't. So if they're continues to be no practicing that we know of, then you'll probably have to pay for at least half of a lesson, if maybe not take over the lessons, because, you know, I just maybe, and again, don't be punitive, but just, you know, maybe your value in this is fading and you need to think about that. So you see what I mean? You put the value on that, you kind of put that on your young adult's shoulders. Without making it punitive that, you know, again, you certainly don't need to remind them, this is good for you. We've been doing this and you're so good at it. That never helps a young adult. What is important is to let them know, I'm not sure if you, it may be that you wish you were doing this, but you know, you're not, you don't practice any. And we just can't afford to pay for lessons that's your practice and lesson. I just don't think it's any good. And don't be afraid if your 15-year-old decides, you know, I think I'm going to stop. That, like, that's not the, it's not a train that once you get off. I, for example, was required, like many young people, I think in first grade and second grade, I took piano and And then my senior year, I asked my mom and dad, could I get lessons again? Because I really wanted to know more piano. And so, you know, it was not like it was done. It was, you know, it had taken over. I had to take over the motivation more.
That's right. And I think sometimes with people parent pleasing kids or people pleasing kids, they stick with it because they know that they're going to disappoint you. But well, what they're really saying is, I'm not excited about this. And you're the one that's pushing this, not me.
Boy. And if that's true, if you suspect that, then your parent of a teenager needs to say, do not do this for us. If you disagree with us about the value of it, then by golly, we're going your way. And doesn't that sound weird? It sounds wrong to parents. Like, no, I know this is important. Of course you do. But this kid is not 8 years old. This is 15, 16, and you must begin to, the whole process is to give them more of the freedom and the responsibility to make their own choices. And choosing piano or not is hardly something that's going to create super damage in their future. It just isn't.
Absolutely. Well, and they have their entire adulthood to come back to that piano, which sometimes they love more when they don't have any pressure of, of learning and lessons, that sort of thing. So.
Exactly. Next question is about bullying, how to handle a young teen who's getting bullied at school.
How many times have we've talked about this? 12 times, six times? I mean,
A lot. It's a problem.
It is a problem. It really is.
Yeah. And it's sprinkled in a lot of our episodes. I know we talked about it on social media and We've talked about it on several episodes, but we actually put out a whole episode on bullying in episode 79. So that really addresses every aspect of bullying. However, like I said, we've answered it in several episodes.
So I'll just summarize again bullying in childhood and teenager is different. I say that all the time. So with an adolescent, it's really hard because, you know, you want to, as a father, you know, when my kids were bullied, I wanted to punch somebody. And that's not a good option of learning, not even legal. And as a mother, you really want to comfort and try to give, here's what you should do. And it's perfectly reasonable at any age to encourage your kid, if it's pretty outright bullying, to involve an authority. That's not a wrong thing to do. But with adolescents, you'll often get pushback that I don't want to be the kid that is seeking protection of some authority. And that's not a bad goal that you want to, because with adolescents, you really, and I've said this, you want to think about and maybe talk to your teenager about, yes, this kid or group of kids are jerks, no question. But do you have any idea why you're the target? And that may sound like, well, I'm blaming the victim. No, not exactly. Bullying does have certain kids are very big targets for that. And it's important for them to have the empowerment of considering it's not your fault, but what is it that maybe this is the third time this year that they've all been doing stuff and they left you out and you found that they were texting about you or whatever. As you'll see in the last episode, the last episode we talked about this, the most common cause of bullying is isolation or perceived isolation. If this kid is alone and or doesn't have a friend strong enough to stand up and say, why don't you shut up when they're talking about your kid, then that's a big problem. And so it's a good chance to talk about a very big issue, which is socialization. Where are your friends when this is happening? And you know, not uncommonly, you'll find that, well, actually one of them was in the group and, you know, he didn't say anything. Wow, he didn't even say anything. Good grief. I hope, what would you do if they were bullying him? And talk about that, because it is about, most often about socializing and whether they perceive them as isolated.
Okay, another question that we had that I think is probably, and this is why it's great for an FAQ, is probably less common, but it's still a great question, is how do we help our teens think about lifelong commitment, like marriage, and prepare them if they think they're going to marry in their late teens or early 20s? What if going away to college coincides with getting married too, which is very different than most of our culture, which waits until almost their 30s to get married. This is someone who's saying, my kid is thinking about this in late teens, early 20s.
Right. And for those,
how would you handle that?
Those parents that are jaws are on the floor. What are you talking about marrying at 18 or 19? It's more common now than you might think, as far as the kind of kids that are beginning to choose that. For example, homeschool kids that have that aren't as much on an academic by comparison, you know, their age group, and they're not as used to hearing all that assumption that you've got to have college and then you've got to wait till you're 30. It's more common for them to really be thinking about that. And I think it's really worth really considering that for those of you like, and I'm kind of one of those that earlier I would think, 19, wait a minute, you've got to finish college. You know how common that is that parents have told their teenagers, look, if you're old enough to get married while you're in college, then you're old enough to support yourself. And we're going to cut off. You need to think about what sense does that make? It's because especially on a Christian, from a Christian value, why is that essential? Now, why is it better to pressure your young adult that, no, we want you to continue to fool around with this person you're in love with and maybe, you know, practically live together, but just don't tell us because you're going to have to wait till after you graduate. Is that really a Christian value or is it a middle class money value? The value of finishing college, which used to be even more so, I get that it's good for you to not let marriage or relationship interfere, if possible, with getting a good education. But very often, if this teenager has or young adult has found someone they're genuinely in love with and they're following, you know, what is best they can, their faith, then I think it's worth rethinking that the insisted value that if you get married, then we're cutting you off. doesn't really fit our faith. It fits more with a middle class assumption of you've got to have education so you can get money. And that's not the same thing. So it is definitely worth rethinking to encourage. I think when you have younger adults getting married, it's most commonly, I hope you have a relationship with this future spouse's parents and, you know, come together as a family to be supportive, which is simply what used to happen long ago. It's not like that's never been done. It was done even, you know, in the early 20th century. Most of the time, people got married at 17, 18. It was not uncommon. So it's just something to reconsider the assumption that that's always wrong. I definitely don't think that's always true. And you should consider the circumstances of these young adults that want to get married.
Mm-hmm. So let me be really specific. So would you say that your financial support, if you have a child, let's say that's in their freshman or sophomore year of college, and you've been paying for room and board and their education while they're off at college, and they say, you know, mom, dad, I've been dating her since high school. This is the one I'm going to marry. And we're trying to stay pure until marriage. And we'd like to go ahead and get married between our sophomore and junior year. Do you continue your financial support of that in the same way you did before? Or do you say, well, that's an adult decision. You're going to have to pitch in here.
Yeah, I think that's exact. And I would just ask, why would you cut it off? Are you mm-hmm. punishing them for the decision to marry? Mm-hmm. And again, in our age, let's face it, you're not talking about kids that say, well, I'm going to honor my parents and God, and we'll be out here in our town, hundreds of miles away from anybody else. And we're going to not fool around. It's just difficult. So, mm-hmm. I think what's the problem with saying, okay, well, if you're sure of this, then, you know, here's the amount we've been paying, and we'll translate that into the same amount that we'll put into whatever arrangement you and she have. And, you know, for example, talking to her parents about it, because it's cheaper to live two than one. And so it's not actually that bad a thing. Why wouldn't you just say, well, here's what we were going to pay. So let's, you can take that amount and put that into an apartment or whatever. Mm-hmm. Sounds here's, wrong, doesn't it?
It does. Because here's what every parent's thinking is, but they're so young. What if they don't know what they're getting into? What if we don't like this person at all? What if both parents are saying, this is a terrible idea? We don't want to support this in any way.
That's exactly right. You know, and that gets into a whole different thing about our assumption about marriage. We really assume that you, when you find the right person, it's the person you're compatible with. And we worry about young people because they are going to change in those years more than if you marry at 30. But you know, marriage, and again, that's not our topic. Marriage is not actually sustained by compatibility. In other words, what the marriage gets into trouble when you get shocked by the incompatibility. Like I thought we were the same. We even lived together for a year, which never works. And so that can be the big jolt. If you are counting on and teaching your kids that you'll know that it's right to marry when you find the person you're fully compatible with, that's a mistake, because mm-hmm. anyone that's been married more than about a month knows that, you know, wow, you're not who I thought. I mean, you and I have some real incompatible things. Marriage is about contributing to the union that you are, not making sure you're heard in your view and get our thoughts together. It doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. But that's a different topic. We don't do marriage here, but that's an important difference.
That's good though. That's good.
Okay, Dr. Ken, last question. Could you give some thoughts to parents who volunteer where their children are involved? One out of my four kids struggles with me being there, and I'm taking it very personally.
I appreciate mm-hmm. the honesty. Mm-hmm. No doubt that's not a father, that's a mother. And, mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's very common. Well, let me put it this way. Parents that are practicing planned emancipation often avoid that. I mean, I often will ask teenagers, so your mom does that. I assume that's terrible for you. And don't be surprised that no, there's a lot of teenagers that are fine with that, but there's also a lot that are not okay with that. And almost mm-hmm. always it's a threat to their own sense of self, their own identity, that I'm here and it feels like my mommy's also kind of checking up. So I think it's important to offer to your teenager, hey, if this is uncomfortable for you, then unless there's other circumstances, I will back out of this. Then you run into the problem of how much of this volunteering that you're doing is for you, that you mm-hmm. really love being up there, part of your kid's life. And you've done it, you know, you were room mother when they were in elementary school and all that stuff. Great. But remember, the goal of adolescence, the hard part is that to give the need that adolescents have, it's the need to not need you. And that's the hardest of all to give, to back mm-hmm. away if they really don't want you to be there. So that's usually what it ends up being. You have a kind of a soul searching is, am I doing this because of my great concern for my kid's high school? Or do I just love and hate to give up being that parent that's involved and a part of my kid's life? And you need to be prepared to give that up. It's quite common for teenagers to feel threatened by that. And there's no need for you to be offended by it or refuse to consider it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a great example. So my daughter wanted me to chaperone the dance, and she was so happy to walk in the door with me, introduce me to all her friends that I don't typically see, you know, that don't come to the house. And halfway through the dance, she grabbed my hand and took me out to the dance floor and wanted me to dance with her.
That's a planned emancipation, mom.
So like life made, I was pretty sure, you know, like I've nailed this motherhood thing. My son, on the other hand, his dance was coming up and his reaction was kind of like, don't you dare show up. You drop me off and you go home.
Yeah, that's also a boy. That's very true. That's great. That's great. Yeah. But yeah, you got to accept, you know, both of those. Yeah, yeah. Your kids are different. That's good. That's really good.
It is hard to remember our own motivations might be a little wayward as a mom trying to get involved in our kids' lives. It's really sometimes a little bit about control and being on the in, being knowledgeable about what's going on at the school.
I love being a mom or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much for all of these questions that you guys have sent in. It makes it a lot of fun to read and hear from you guys. And I enjoy these FAQs that we've been doing. Thanks, Ashley. Thanks, Dr. Kin.
Thanks for joining us today. Hit the subscribe button so you won't miss an episode. Also, leave us a review. This is how other listeners find our podcast. Follow us on Instagram at Feeding the Mouth.
We appreciate you and would love to hear from you. If you have any questions, thoughts, or ideas about what we've discussed today, please email us at podcast@feedingthemouth.com.
This time of year, the school calendar really starts to fill up. Spring activities, testing season, and that final push toward the end of the year. It's a great moment for kids to stay focused and build confidence in what they're learning. That's where IXL comes in. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand their schoolwork, from math and reading to writing and science. It's designed for pre-K through 12th grade, with personalized interactive content that adapts to each child's level and pace. IXL makes it easy to stay on track with instant feedback and clear explanations, skills organized by grade level, and simple progress tracking. It fits into even the busiest spring schedules. It's also trusted nationwide. In fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.